Hey everyone, Emma and I are continuing to take turns featuring the anti-racism educational resources that we are engaging with each month, because we believe that education leads to open hearts and free voices that are empowered to speak up and fight for change. Our hope is that you will find these resources useful for your education, and that they will also help you to cross the threshold into doing active anti-racism work so that we can create an equitable world together. We love you all. Black Lives Matter. If you have not yet listened to the podcast, The 1619 Project, I highly recommend that you do. I'm still very much unpacking all that I learned from this series and how no part of American life is untouched by slavery, a fact that is both sobering and yet so important to understand. Here is the official podcast description. In August of 1619, a ship carrying more than 20 enslaved Africans arrived in the English colony of Virginia. America was not yet America, but this was the moment it began. No aspect of the country that would be formed here has been untouched by the 250 years of slavery that followed. On the 400th anniversary of this fateful moment, it is time to tell the story. 1619 is a New York Times audio series hosted by Nicole Hannah-Jones. The 1619 Project is an ongoing initiative from the New York Times Magazine that began in August of 2019, the 400th anniversary of the beginning of American slavery. It aims to reframe the country's history by placing the consequences of slavery and the contributions of Black Americans at the very center of our national narrative. You can find a link to the 1619 Project podcast in the show notes below.
Welcome to the Full Heart, Free Voice podcast. I'm Emma Veritas. I'm a writer and writing coach for women who want to start writing. And I'm a teacher for women who want to find their true selves again.
And I'm Caitlin Bosshart, a life coach for the multi-passionate at heart and wedding coach for couples planning non-traditional weddings. We read books that inspire you to live with a full heart
and a free voice. Hey everyone, before we get started with today's episode, we have a fun announcement for you. So Caitlin and I have recently opened up our affiliate shop. Our affiliate shop is a library of resources by Clarissa Pinkola Estes, and you can find it at wildauthenticity.com/podcast shop. And when you go there, you'll find a list of links to Women Who Run With the Wolves, but also to all of Clarissa Pinkola Estes's audio classes that she's done through Sounds True. And when you buy these through these links, you support Clarissa Pinkola Estes, you support Sounds True, which is a very cool independent publisher, and you support our podcast because Sounds True has a very generous and amazing affiliate percentage that they give to us whenever you buy something. So it's this beautiful win-win-win, and it's also an opportunity for you to dive deeper into these educational resources. And so I just wanted to ask Caitlin today, Caitlin, what is one thing you have loved about listening to Clarissa Pinkola Estes's audio classes?
Well, I think it's, you know, when we are diving in so intimately with her work, and in a way it's like, I don't know about you, but there's been times I'm like, oh, it's Clarissa Pinkola Estes. Like there's a little bit of this, like, I don't know, she's like ethereal, I think in some ways in my mind and in this, but you know, there was something that was so nice is, you know, when I listen to her audios, I get to hear her voice and I get, there's like a sense of her heart and her intention that comes through in a way that, you know, now that I've listened to her voice and how she tells these stories, when I'm reading, I hear like her tone and how she kind of explains things. And it gives me a different level of understanding, I think, of the way that she is expressing her ideas and her thoughts and her wisdom. And so that's been one of the coolest things, that it's just like another level of kind of getting to know this author that we are engaging with so intimately and learning from.
And in the Sealskin Soulskin chapter we're studying now, Clarissa Pinkola Estes talks about different types of dreams that can come to you when it is time for you to do deep soul work. And we want to let you know there is a fantastic audio class called Beginner's Dream Interpretation, where Dr. Estes explains in full how to interpret dream symbols. So if you'd love to dive deeper into this topic, we invite you to go to wildauthenticity.com/podcast shop and click on our special link to purchase this class. Thanks, everyone.
Hello and welcome to our fourth and final bonus throwback episode from the four-part series that Emma and I created all about what the bees have to teach us each season. This time, we will be focusing on the energies of winter as we near the winter solstice in the Northern Hemisphere. As I've shared before, we love these episodes and have chosen to share them with you because they connect so beautifully with the life-death-life cycle, which Dr. Clarissa Pinkola Estes says is the essence of the wild woman, and we hope that you have enjoyed them. In this episode, we talk about how this time of year calls us to turn inward and embrace internal stillness. Winter in the hive is a time of nourishment, sacred rest, and deep self-care. However, I know that stillness can also feel uncomfortable. If you struggle to find a sense of peace in stillness, as I often have, I encourage you to return to episode 6 to the guided inner hive meditation for embracing stillness. This meditation was originally inspired by bees in the winter, and I hope that you'll find it supportive. Before I get into the episode, I wanted to give you a heads up on a few things. This was recorded several years ago before we had any special recording equipment, so the sound quality is not quite what you're used to hearing on the podcast. Also, in this episode, I refer to my business as Life Coaching for the Heart and Inner Hive. And over the years, my business has very much evolved and taken on new form. And while this is no longer what I call my business, the philosophies that I share in this episode are still very much infused into the work I do as a coach. One last thing. Emma and I are celebrating the 1-year mark since we began recording this podcast, and we want to thank you all so much for being part of this incredible journey. We have decided to take a cue from the honeybees, and we will be pausing the podcast until February to allow ourselves some time and space to rest and replenish. We hope you all have a wonderful holiday season, and please know how truly grateful we are for each and every one of you.
I have invited my friend Caitlin Bossart, who is a life coach and beekeeper, onto the podcast to talk about natural cycles and what's happening with bees. So Caitlin does amazing work as a life coach where she uses the metaphor of a beehive to help people come into wholeness in their own life. And her work is super fun. I love hearing her talk about it. I can just listen nonstop to what's happening with the bees and the beehives. And so Caitlin's on the call now. Hey, Caitlin.
Hi, Emma.
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me tonight.
You're welcome. I'm very excited. So I thought we could start off by you just explaining a little bit more about your work and what you do.
Sure. Well, as a woman and a life coach and a beekeeper, the honeybee has actually been one of my greatest and also most unlikely teachers. I actually began my journey as a life coach and a beekeeper the same spring of 2014, and inevitably these two new passions started to influence each other. And while I tried to take my business down some different paths and tried out some different things, I just couldn't ignore the incredible symbolism and the metaphor that the honeybee had to offer, especially as it related to my really soul-felt passion of working with women to help them find their sense of wholeness. Mm. And for this reason, that's why I actually call my business Caitlin Bossart Life Coaching for the Heart and Inner Hive.
Nice.
So the honeybee is this, and the reason why I use that terminology, inner hive, is because the honeybee is this incredibly fascinating creature that, although the colony of honeybees is actually made up of thousands of individuals, each one of them actually has their own personality. They can make their own decisions, but they act as if they're this singular organism. And I like to think of it as if each bee is like the cell and a body, and each bee has its own crucial role that supports the health and the wholeness of the hive. And when I learned this, it occurred to me that really we're not so different, that we are made up of many multidimensional facets that all together create our unique wholeness, our own inner hive. What drives my core of my coaching philosophy is really to try to help women to acknowledge, honor, and hope, and accept all the different aspects of themselves in this moment, even the ones that they would rather hide away, and help them to move into this place that their life honors their wholeness and that it feels deeply nourishing to the core of their being, which I lovingly refer to as the inner queen.
Nice.
And I just think that when we bring our wholeness and our, you know, honor our inner queens, I think that ultimately that allows us to bring our strengths and our gifts into the world. And that just has a far reaching impact on everything around us. So that's kind of where I come from as a coach.
Awesome. I love it. It's so unique and different and really powerful, I think. I love your work. Let's get into the bees in winter and what's going on in the hive right now. And actually, first, I want to apologize. I want to mention that there might be some background noise of construction work and drilling going on. An apartment near me is having work done. So just want to throw out an apology for that before we move on. Okay. So tell us about bees in winter.
Well, the thing that I really love about the honeybee is that even though they're hidden away in their hives in the coldest months of the year, that even in the winter, there's a lot to be gained from their example. And not a lot of people actually know what happens within the hive in the winter. So I do want to, you know, really paint this picture of what it's like for them. As bees prepare for winter, they clean out their hives, they clean out the dust and the debris, the dead bees, basically anything that doesn't serve them. And at the same time, there's a lot of bees that are working tirelessly to stock their hives full of nectar and pollen so that the colony ultimately has everything that they need to survive the winter. And then when the days become darker and colder, the bees are then forced to draw within their hive and form a tight cluster around their queen bee. The bees' foremost responsibility in the winter is to protect and care for their queen. Mm-hmm. While in the cluster, the bees actually will rotate from the outside of the cluster in to make sure that they are getting warm enough, and then they kind of take their turn back on the outside, very similar to the way that penguins tend to rotate in their clusters as well. And when the temperatures become really, really low, they will draw closer and closer together the colder it gets. And at some point, they will actually pull so tightly together that the outside layer of the bees is nearly as insulative as a bird's feathers, which I just find really fascinating.
Oh, that's interesting. Can you say that again? What happens?
Yeah, so the bees will cluster. If it's not incredibly cold, the cluster will be a little bit bigger. But as it gets colder, they get closer and closer together to try to conserve as much of the heat that they as they can. Mm-hmm. And when they're at their tightest cluster, they are as close together as they possibly can be. That outer layer of bees, because of how close they're together, makes a layer around the whole cluster that's as insulative as bird's feathers, or just about as insulative as a bird's feathers. So when something is insulated, it means that it is able to hold in that heat.
Okay. I get it. That's really neat.
Like a thermos is an insulated container that keeps like the liquid hot. Yeah. Yeah. So when they're in this cluster, the bees that are on the outside of the cluster are obviously going to be the coldest, and they can at times become so cold that they appear to be virtually motionless. Their organs start to slow down, and that if you were to look at them, you wouldn't really be able to tell whether or not they're alive. But there still is this metabolic activity that's occurring in their bodies as they're turning honey into energy. And that energy goes straight to their flight muscles, which begins to shiver. Mm-hmm. And that contracting and relaxing of that muscle actually generates enough warmth to keep the colony and, most importantly, the queen alive in the winter. And just another kind of cool fact about the bees and these flight muscles is they can actually intentionally unhook their wings from these flight muscles so that when they're pumping these muscles in the wintertime, they're not also flapping their wings.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah. So, and with them being able to contract these muscles and generate this heat, they can typically keep the cluster, the center of the cluster, at 90 to 95 degrees Fahrenheit. And obviously there's going to be some variation with how cold it is, how healthy the bees are. If there's a big colony versus a really small one, they'll be able to keep that heat a little bit better. But that's kind of the average temperature that they can maintain that cluster at. And the other piece of this is, if, you know, they, when they're in this cluster, if it's cold enough, they may be kind of huddled up in one part of their honey store. But if it's so cold that they're not able to break cluster, meaning move around and risk maybe losing some of the heat that they've created, they won't necessarily be able to move over just a little bit to get to the next honey store. So because of that risk, the bees will intentionally conserve their energy in case for some reason they're not able to reach the next honey store for several weeks, for example, if it's really cold. So in order for them to achieve this, the bees will actually alter the oxygen and the CO2 content within the cluster. And when they do this, it actually lowers their metabolic rate. And as humans, we definitely cannot survive in this type of environment, but for whatever reason, the bees are able to. And it's also believed that the bees will even hold their breath for up to a day at a time in the winter.
Whoa.
And the reason why they do this, I know, it's like crazy. And the reason why they do this is to prevent or limit the amount of water that their bodies lose through respiration. It's important that they do this because they actually won't have a source of water the entire winter. So they need to hold in as much as they can.
So how does it work with the honey stores? Like, what is that set up?
So typically, and there's lots of different types of beehives, but the type that I have is the ones that I think most people are the most familiar with, that they look sort of like boxes just stacked on top of each other. Mm-hmm. And it's called a Langstroth hive. And the bottom two boxes are the largest. The very bottom one is typically the one during the spring and summer and fall, where I consider that to be the nest. That's where most of the, typically, and there's no perfect rules around bees because they all do things a little bit differently. But typically, the bottom box is their nest. That's where the queen lays most of her eggs, and the brood or the baby bees are being raised and things like that. And the second box, the top box, is what I call the pantry. So the bees will store up honey all year long, so that they have plenty to survive the winter. So when in the winter time, when the bees cluster, they will cluster within the honey store, so that while they're within that, when they're in that cluster, they're actually they're completely surrounded by their honey store. Huh. But they can only reach the honey that's within the circumference, or so to speak, of their cluster. So if it's too cold, that they can't risk losing the heat that they've created within their cluster to even move over to the right or the left a little bit to get more honey. If it's long enough, they could actually have lots and lots of honey in their pantry, but they could starve to death because it was too cold for them to reach it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And there's things that beekeepers will do to try to help them through that process a little bit. You can feed them with, basically it's like fondant, like that fancy cake frosting that you can like mold and things like that. So you can kind of make this like sugary mixture, and you can put it in a space where you know that they can reach it if they needed to. But I tend to try to not do any of that stuff. I try not to give them any additional or too much additional sugar or anything unless it's really needed. I'd rather them just eat what's natural. I think they tend to be a little bit healthier that way.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's really interesting. So how do you, so if you think about all of that and the bees and the wintertime, how do you then like work with your clients and help them come to wholeness with the metaphor of the bees in winter?
Yeah. So, well, when I really sat down and was doing a lot of research about the bees, and actually there's a couple more things I just want to mention just because I think it'll play into this whole like metaphor.
Right.
But so the other thing that I think is interesting to know is that even though the bees can generate their own heat, they are actually cold-blooded, and so their body temperatures are really influenced by the ambient temperature in the hive. And if it gets cold enough, a bee can actually, if their body temperature drops below 44 degrees Fahrenheit, they will enter what's called a chill-induced coma. If they stay in that coma for a few days, then they could die. But if it warms back up, then it's kind of like they come back to life, which is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And the last kind of cool thing about the winter for the bees is that, you know, as it does start to get warmer, they might not really be coming out of their hive a lot, but they will break cluster. They can start moving around their hive and kind of resuming life as normal, and they'll prepare for spring. The queen will start laying eggs, and this new life is brought back into the hive.
Mm.
So as I was doing all this research about the bees and making sure that I really understood what was going on, it was all these different metaphors started to occur to me. And for the honeybee, time, the winter time is a time for turning inward, and it's about long periods of stillness. And as humans, we draw inside of our homes, but it's also important that we actually take that a step further and that we go within, and that we go within ourselves, that we allow both our bodies and our minds to become still. Because when we become still, we're able to rejuvenate, and we can reflect. And we can quiet the chatter and the distractions that might actually be pulling us away from what's most important, which in my mind is nurturing the inner queen.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, stillness is definitely something that we all struggle with. I know that, you know, you and I have talked about this before, that it's really easy to mistake stillness for stagnation.
Right.
But just like the bees who are completely still, there's still something happening. That energy is flowing to their flight muscles and providing just what they all need, which is that heat. And when we go into stillness, this intentional, purposeful stillness, it allows energy to still flow without effort, just like it does for the bees. And in doing so, they're protecting their most precious asset. I think that we can do the same thing.
Today's episode was brought to you by me, Caitlin Bosshart. I believe that your ideas belong in this world. And now more than ever, we need to lean into the things that light us up and reminds us of what's possible for ourselves. You might even believe this too, but it can be overwhelming to get started. The thing is, I know intimately what it's like to spend more time thinking about and dreaming about my passion projects than actually doing them. And I know what it's like to have that fact eat away at you. If that sounds familiar, I want to help you change that. I have created a 6-step workbook called Finally Start Your Passion Projects that will help you get unstuck, break through barriers, and create an action plan so that you can move beyond dreaming to doing. To download your free workbook, visit my website, caitlinbosshart.com/finally-start-your-passion-projects, with an S at the end. The link is in the show notes. Here's to you taking this meaningful step towards creating a life that lights you up and ignites your passions.
Yeah, I totally agree about that. And especially about that thing where when you feel burnt out and you know that it's time to rest, and it's so hard to get there because what happens to me is I feel that like social compulsion, like I have to be doing things, or I don't know, something's wrong with me, or I'm not being accomplished. But it's so nice to remember that if my body, which is a piece of nature, is in a state where it's just time for dormancy, then I am doing something. Like I'm taking care of that piece of me that really knows what's right. You know, like the inner queen or the soul does need to be nurtured, and nurturing my inner queen is accomplishing something, especially when,
you know, it's a time for rest in our life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that we all have, you know, different weather will all, I think, have this sort of craving to do different things. I know that when it's really rainy and cloudy and cold outside or snowing, I really want to be inside. I want to be able to curl up, but that's like, and I feel like there's like almost like this, you know, my body, like we were, you just said, like my body like wants to do that, but it's more my mind that will be telling me, no, you should be doing something else. You should be productive. Like you should, whatever.
Right.
And I think that, I mean, obviously there are times when we aren't able to do that always, but I think that if we allow ourselves to align a little bit more with sort of the natural rhythms, I think there's something to that. I think people used to live that way a lot more and we've gotten away from that. And that's why it's so fun to look to the bees for this, some of this inspiration.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And kind of like on this same, you know, vein is that, you know, in order for the bees to protect the queen, they have to conserve their energy and their breath, literally their breath. Mm-hmm. And I think that our inner queen is going to do the same thing. We need to conserve our energy, especially in the winter, because we need some of that energy to be reserved for the inner queen, for ourselves.
Right.
And I think it's, you know, like when I was talking about how, you know, the bees, if they get so cold that they might end up freezing, you know, the one thing I really want to be clear on is that stillness is not different than freezing. Mm-hmm. Freezing is out of our control. It's out of the bees' control. And ultimately, if they're frozen too long, that cold for too long, they do end up dying.
Right.
But we want to be in a space where we're still, but that energy is still flowing and we're not immobilized in that space.
Yeah, the stillness of the bees, the way how you describe it to me seems much more nourishing. Like, I love that their cluster is inside their stores of honey. Like, I just love imagining a pantry being like, I'm feeding myself now. That's what I'm doing. It's winter. It's that hibernation thing. And it's not that frozen stillness, which that, you know, really brings up the fight, flight, or freeze response. Like that type of when you're so scared that you're frozen and stuck and you can't do anything, that seems different than the type of stillness you're describing with the bees. That's truly nourishing and restful, and you're doing it because you're on the path of, you know, doing your thing. Or I always bring everything back to soul's calling, that like doing your soul's calling, and then there comes a time where it's just time for dormancy and hibernation, and that's the next step for you.
Absolutely. And I think like I was saying, that, you know, when we become still, it's like we kind of can quiet the distractions.
Right.
And if you're really wanting to move toward your soul's calling, you need to be in a space where you're not pulled away from it first before you can really go after it, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. The other piece of this that I think is so important, and we're starting to talk about it, is just the fact that the queen allows herself to be totally and completely cared for in the winter. And how many of us ever allow ourselves to be completely cared for? It's just like this beautiful skill and an art that I think is really worth all of us trying to master.
Right.
And I just try to remind myself that, you know, here's this bee, this queen bee, and she lays 2,000 eggs a day for most of the year. And in the winter time, it's her time to rest and to be nurtured by her daughters. And she so gracefully accepts this care. When I think of this for me, it doesn't necessarily mean that I would translate this to, well, I need to let everybody take care of me. Sometimes it's not realistic to be cared for by another person. And maybe that's actually not even what we need.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe we just take total and complete care of ourselves.
Right.
And that we make our inner queen and ourselves the ultimate priority for even a few hours at a time. And I think it's really important that we kind of consider that. Like, you know, if I was really going to nurture and care for myself completely for 1 hour, what would that look like for me? You know, and when you're in this space of really caring for yourself, your surroundings are so important. And it brings me back to this idea of that the how the bees or the fact that the bees are cold-blooded and they're really at the mercy of their surrounding temperature. And energetically, we're not so different. So when we're in the wintertime and if, when we're choosing to be in stillness and nurturing our inner queen, we have to think about our surroundings so that we can do that for ourselves. Mm-hmm. So it's important that we consider, where do we want to be when we're doing this? Mm-hmm. What do we want to have surrounding us? Who do we want to be with? Mm-hmm. And the underlying question is always, you know, what would be the most nourishing, loving, and delicious to the inner queen? What would that part of us want more than anything right now? Because I think that when we actually let ourselves do this, you know, when the queen bee and the inner queen is truly nurtured, they're actually able to emerge from this time of stillness really strong and vibrant. And I think that the queen who allows herself to be cared for is then really ready to actually bring her purpose into the world. And by the end of winter, she already is bringing new energy. It's like, it's not even spring yet, and she's like already ready to go. Right. So it doesn't mean that you have to be still the entire winter, but it's just allowing some type of space for that. And when you're really inspired and ready, you know, to move forward and to start creating things and bringing yourself more into the world, then do that. There's no rules around it.
Yeah. And I think something I find interesting is that we might all have different seasons of dormancy. And I think that winter, you know, obviously like the earth brings us into that space just through it being cold and dark. But I think that sometimes in an individual, they can have a natural cycle where their time of dormancy might actually be spring. You know, just that's when they're.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it's good to remember at any season that when you feel it and you feel that hibernation coming on, I love that idea that it's letting yourself go into stillness, but also what's nurturing for you. And lately, the most nurturing thing for me has been going on these really long walks. So I'm moving, but I feel like I'm nurturing my inner queen, and it's bringing me into that state of stillness and peacefulness just inside myself. But I'm doing that through moving and just being outside.
Yeah.
And where I live, it's a little bit easier to do that because it's I live in California, so I don't have such a hard winter here. But it makes a difference, I think. And I think that sometimes the word stillness can freak people out because they think they actually have to just sit down and do nothing. But really, it's
right.
Like, what is it that will help you come to a place of peace inside yourself? And I love that. Like, what would just feel nurturing? And it might just be walking outside. Sometimes for me, it's watching the stupidest thing on TV that there is. And I love that. I love watching stupid TV shows sometimes. That just feels like my inner queen. I don't know. So it's really, I like that idea that it's different for everyone when you ask that question of like, what would just feel peaceful and nurtured?
Exactly. There's really no rules at all. And when I was sitting down with this and just thinking what would be really nurturing to me, the first thing that comes to my mind is yoga. Like, I feel like I'm moving and I'm working my body, but my mind feels the most still when I'm doing yoga. And that might be completely different for somebody else. That might be running, or that might be reading a book, or that might be sitting down and having a really amazing conversation with a friend that just feels super, a bit like heartwarming, and whatever that is. I think it's great. And I like that you mentioned, you know, being in California too, because if the bees are in an environment where it doesn't get that cold, their time of drawing in is going to look really, really different. Mm. So it might be a lot shorter. They might actually be a lot less still in certain places. If it doesn't get cold enough for them, they won't necessarily cluster for nearly as long, or they won't, their body temperatures, you know, and their bodies won't slow down the same way. So they're very much in tune with what's happening in the earth. And I think if we just become in tune with our own rhythm, like you're saying, like that stillness could be at any time, and we can just utilize this wisdom however it best serves us at whatever time.
Right. Yeah. I want to go back to something you mentioned at the very beginning, which was preparing for stillness when the bees were preparing for dormancy, and that concept of cleaning out from your hive what doesn't serve you, but then also bringing in what's nourishing for you. That definitely popped out for me when you talked about that, and that thinking about when you feel, so when I feel times of dormancy coming on, it's usually I just get really tired. That's my thing. I'm just like, I'm exhausted now, and now it's time for stillness. And I like the idea of prepping it and letting myself setting myself up for what is not going to serve me during this time of stillness, and bringing in what will serve me. I love, like, when I'm ready to just take a nap or whatever, even if it's just a time of stillness during the day, of clearing out like my schedule. And even lately, mm-hmm. I've changed up my schedule so that on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, my days are cleared out now so that I can just write. And I'm scheduling my activities, my chats with friends and things that I do on Tuesdays and Thursdays. That's been really nice too. A really nice way to prep, just adding in more peacefulness and relaxation into my life.
Yeah. I love that you said that idea of like setting up for success, because that, you know, if you're setting yourself up for that, if you're preparing every aspect of yourself, your mind, your space, your emotions, your whatever it is, if you're preparing yourself for it, I think it can makes it that much easier, I guess, more like fruitful to actually go into that space if you aren't, again, having anything that's kind of pulling you away from it. Mm-hmm. I think that's awesome. That I love that you are so intentional about what you do on each week, and that you're allowing each of these, and really, like, you can take this, it doesn't have to be for stillness, it can be for anything, but it's just allowing yourself to prepare for whatever it is that you're going into, and hopefully whatever it is that you're going into is just nurturing to yourself. Mm. I love that.
Yeah, I like it. I like that the bees do that. I like that they have a time of just cleaning out. It's kind of cool that they do that.
Yeah, they do. I mean, it's even actually throughout the winter, they continue to clean out. So we've had a couple of really warm days in Colorado, and when it gets above about 50 degrees, the bees will break the cluster and they actually will continue to clear out. Hmm. So I went out to the hive earlier today and they were bringing out dead bees and dirt and whatever else they, you know, that had accumulated since the last time they were able to do this. So, you know, as we're going through this, like, if we keep finding things that we don't need and we want to clear out, you know, that process is ongoing throughout the winter. And, you know, there's not a perfect time to do it except for when you feel called to do it.
Today's episode is brought to you by me, Emma Veritas. How is it that some people make writing look so easy? Sometimes it seems like everyone but you is completely fearless. Here's the truth. Writing doesn't have to be so scary or painful. In my free workbook, 3 Habits to Calm Your Fear and Get You Writing, I show you how. By doing one or more of these habits before you write, you'll find more ease, less fear, and more words on the page. You can download your workbook today at wildauthenticity.com/3habits. The link is in the show notes. I think the bees are, it's so interesting to hear about what they do, because it's just, you don't know, there's this hive and you really don't know what's going on in there. I would have thought that they just remained hibernating and kind of did nothing. Like how I would imagine frogs, they just like bury underground for the winter. But I love hearing about
the things that they actually do throughout the winter. I thought it was really interesting that they will unhook their wings. That's fascinating. When they do that, do they grow new wings?
No, it's like they literally have, it's like these little hooks. So they kind of, the wings can hook into the muscle or unhook. And so they just can lay flat and not be moved by the pulsing of those muscles, or they can reattach them, like hooks them back into those muscles so that when the muscles pump, it also flaps the wings.
Huh.
So, yeah, so it's just, the anatomy of a bee is like so incredible. And it's, I mean, the anatomy of any living thing is absolutely incredible, but they're just really fascinating how functional their bodies are. And how they have all these like cool little things, like even they have these little notches in their arms that are the perfect shape for grooming or like sliding pollen off of their antenna. So they have this like perfect little notch just for the antennas on each of their legs. And they're just like cool stuff like that. It's just
nice. They're
fascinating.
Yeah, that is fascinating. If I were to, so I'm immediately thinking of how to make a metaphor for our lives about the wings and unhooking them. And I was thinking how, like, sometimes that does happen where their wings are obviously essential for their life when they're flying around and they're special and they're, you know, it's a huge part of them. But how sometimes, even with us, you know, when we're doing our work and our soul's calling, there are times where you do have to put down things that are essential to you. Like I've had times where, you know, for me, writing is such an essential part of what I've done so far in my work. And sometimes it's like writing is the thing that I have to stop doing in order to rest and recover and heal. And those, I think those are some of the hardest times of coming into stillness or coming in, like accepting dormancy, is when it's time to take a break from the things that you believe are essential.
Right. It's like they're giving up their ability to go anywhere when they unhook. If they don't hook back in, they couldn't fly. But they need to do that. If they were flapping their wings, they would be actually fanning all of the heat away from them. And that's not what they want to do. So it's like, it's essential in a different way. You know, it's like different periods of time in our lives require different essential action or inaction or whatever. And I think it is difficult to set things aside from time to time, but ultimately, you know, it can be exactly what you need.
Mm.
Absolutely. I love that example.
Are there any other metaphors that when, you know, you had a really cool retreat with clients this past weekend. Was there anything that really stood out for you, or any other metaphors that really stood out for you when you were working with clients and talking about the winter?
Oh, something that stood out. I mean, we talked, it was, you know, similar things that what we're talking about, but I think it's just that idea of everything. I think that like the thread kind of through a lot of this is that every single thing that the bees do. And when I had this retreat this weekend, kind of going through this whole metaphor of bees in the winter, it's just everything that we did was very intentional for this, like trying to honor this time of the year. And I love that ultimately everything that the bees do, I mean, really any time of the year, but I think especially in the winter, it's so deeply intentional.
Mm.
And regardless of what we're doing, even if we're very active or if we are choosing to be very still, that we're doing so not just out of complacency, or we're doing it because we're intentionally doing it, we're choosing to doing it, and we're honoring a piece of ourselves as we're, you know, making these different choices in the winter, or, you know, at whatever time we would consider to be our winter.
Mm.
I think that's the big thread through all of it.
I can see that. So it's, yeah, they're purposefully cleaning out the hive. They're purposefully clustering together with their stores of honey. They're purposefully conserving their energy. even to the point of conserving their breath. It does. It seems so peaceful. And they're so focused on nurturing the queen. So how do they nurture the queen? Like, what are they actually doing in the cluster? Do they actually feed her?
They do. There's nothing, you know, this time of year, there's nothing for her to do. She's not laying eggs or anything like that. So she is really just in the center of the cluster, being warmed by all of their bodies. And she is being fed and cleaned and cared for. And because of the queen emits this pheromone that ultimately, that pheromone is what helps all of the bees to identify themselves as that single organism, essentially. You couldn't just pick up a bee and just without, you know, special procedures, which I won't go into, like special ways of doing it, but you can't just pick up a bee and throw them into another hive. They wouldn't identify with that hive right away. There's like a certain process that where they have to change over to the new pheromone. But it's like they're so like connected into her because she's the core. She's the glue that holds all of them together and gives them purpose and meaning for what they do. And without her, they're completely lost and confused and they're disorganized. So it's kind of like, you know, it's like they're nurturing her because in nurturing her, they're nurturing themselves. And she's just there keeping them all, you know, giving them all a purpose to continue, you know, moving forward and moving through this time of stillness. And she just accepts it. I mean, that's the thing I think is so beautiful, that she just accepts that care. She wouldn't question doing that. You know, as humans, we get so in our way about being cared for and what that means about us and stuff. You know, she wouldn't question that. It's just is how it is.
Right. I think about that a lot too. And I think about plants because that's kind of my big thing. I love flowers and plants. And I think the same thing, that they would never question whether they deserve to bloom or not, or whether they deserve to receive rain or not. And, you know, if they, like, especially when you think about growth, like, they would never think about, oh, should I be growing today? I don't know. Like, they just don't do that. They just do their thing. And I think, when I think about us, our minds make up this story that somehow we're not a piece of nature. And we lose connection with that through the mind. And I think it's so nice to remember what it's like when something in nature really does their thing. Like, she's just doing her thing. This mm-hmm. is what she does. And all the bees that are clustering around her, they're also just doing their thing. And I think that is just, I don't know, I think it's really beautiful and such a good thing to imagine doing, of like what it would be like to be a bee just doing my thing, or to be a flower just doing my thing.
Yeah, I love that. I love that idea of, I love that thinking about what it's like to be a bee, because I actually do that all the time. I do that every day. I think about the bees and what that would be like, and just how freeing that would feel to never question my purpose and what it is that I'm meant to do. The thing is, I think sometimes we think that we're so separate from nature, and that it's sort of like the nature can do this, but I can't because I'm not nature. But we are part of nature. We're connected to that, and that's why it's so important that we do connect back in and allow our body rhythms to follow, you know, the natural rhythms, you know, however that looks like for each one of us.
Right. Yeah. So cool. Caitlin, this has been such an interesting conversation. Thank you so much for all the research you've done about bees and everything you've taught us about metaphors and the wisdom from the bees and how we can really take that into our lives. Before we end, I'm just curious if there's anything that
you're still thinking about, or anything last thing that you'd like to share with us about bees?
Can I advocate for the bees a little bit? Can that be my last thing?
Go for it.
Did I say?
Yes.
Okay. So some people know about what's happening in the world with the bees. It's like, it's amazing. I instantly tear up as I talk about this, but they are in trouble. They're major, major trouble. There's so many things that we as humans are doing and have been doing that is very detrimental to them, and they are dying off. I had going into winter 4 hives, and I only have 1 right now.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know exactly what's happened. At some point I'll have to go through the hives and see if I can determine maybe what happened, why they weren't strong enough, were they sick, did they get into pesticides? There's just so many factors that can lead to this happening, but it's been happening to beekeepers all over the world. And I think it's just that we're, you know, part of it, it's like, as because we're part of nature, I think we need to also be honoring nature and doing what we can to protect it. And I think that bees are kind of the canary in the coal mine. And if we don't do what we can to protect them, ultimately what's killing them will impact or eventually kill us. And right. Without the bees, you know, we would lose, you know, a third of the food that we eat. So it's not a small problem. And they're just this beautiful, actually matriarchal. Most people don't know that. Most bees are female, but they're this beautiful matriarchal society. And each one of them, you know, what bees are about is this small collective action towards, you know, this greater vision. And I think that we are just like that. We can be just like that. So I think that if we are working together for the greater good, I think that there's no limit to the impact that we can have on the better. And I think that we can be better and happier and healthier, and so can the earth. So,
yeah,
you know, I think to do what we can to save the bees and the earth. That's where I want to leave it today.
Nice. What is something, do you know, like what, if people are listening and they're wondering if there is something they can do to help the bees, like what's one thing that we can do?
Well, I think one thing, I have a list, but one thing that I think is one, you can get a lot of enjoyment about from it is planting flowers and doing a little bit of research on flowers that will be blooming, some in the early spring all the way to the late fall, mm-hmm. Is really helpful to make sure they have enough food. And at the same time, making sure that the plants that you're planting have not been treated, that the seeds and the plants have not been treated with in some type of insecticide or herbicide, mm-hmm. That could be detrimental to the bees. And, you know, not spraying things on your yards and trying to find more natural ways to utilize, or, you know, to, you know, combat weeds and things like that. So there's a lot of things that you can do actually just to make your own space more beautiful and healthier that will have a huge impact on the bees. The more, we just moved into our house a year ago and planted so many flowers and different plants and things like that. And it's amazing the biodiversity that we have. I mean, the amount of types of honeybees and bumblebees, and you just attract so much wildlife and so much life to your little space on this earth. So I encourage you all to do that. I think you'll have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. And I think actually my best friend just started doing research on how to plant a pollinator garden. So I think that's something to look at. Is a pollinator garden and how to plant it and the flowers that will grow in your region and the colors of the flowers that work really well. I think researching that could be really cool.
Yes, absolutely. And it's really fun too.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so, so much.
Oh, thank you, Emma.
This episode was produced by Emma Veritas and Caitlin Bosshart. You can find out more about me, Emma, at my website, wildauthenticity.com, where you can also download your free workbook, 3 habits to calm your fear and get you writing.
And you can find out more about me, Caitlin, at my website, caitlinbosshart.com, and on Instagram at caitlin_bosshart. The nicest thing that you can do for us is to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast player.
To stay connected with us, join the conversation in our Facebook group, follow along with us on Instagram, and sign up for our monthly newsletter. You'll find all the links in our show notes.
A special thank you to the amazing artists whose music is featured in our podcast, Wally Ingram, Stevie Black, and Tom Freund. You heard portions of their tracks, Shine a Light and Who Do You Love, from their record Spa Day.
And thanks to Caitlin Bosshart for creating our beautiful cover art. And thank you to Kirit Basu for all his audio and technical help.
And a huge thank you to Emma Veritas for her editing magic. Last but not least, thank you to you, our listeners.